Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harris, and it's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, and the host is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's also a champion in the battle against ageism. Carol plays a big role, as always, in today's hour. She'll be talking shortly with Carolyn Brent, nationally acclaimed caregiver advocate who has dedicated her life to preparing the elderly and their caregivers to face end-of-life issues. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled The Caregiver's Companion, Caring for Your Loved One Medically, Financially, and Emotionally While Caring for Yourself. It's published by Harlequin. Let's kick the program off with Carol Marks in conversation now with two outstanding women, Maria Shriver and Dr. Maria Correo. Maria Shriver is a journalist and author of six best-selling books and former First Lady of California, is the wife of former California governor and very famous actor Arnold Schwarzenegger. She was executive producer of the Alzheimer's Project, earning two Emmy Awards, and she's a member of the Kennedy family. Her mother, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, was the sister of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Ted Kennedy. She's working with the Alzheimer's Association to launch the largest health initiative for women to wipe out the disease that has reached epidemic levels. Dr. Correo is Chief Science Officer, Medical and Scientific Relations at the Alzheimer's Association. Here now is Carol Marks in conversation with Maria Shriver and Dr. Maria Correo.
And when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, the second leading cause of death in the U.S., can you tell us why it's called the silver tsunami of the 21st century?
Well, there's so many people getting Alzheimer's. Calling it a tsunami is probably pretty accurate, and it disproportionately affects women. A woman in her early 60s is twice as likely to get Alzheimer's as she is to get breast cancer. And women are the primary caregivers of people with Alzheimer's and all sorts of other diseases. So women are impacted by it by getting it, and they're impacted by it by caregiving for those who have it. And that causes them really to lose jobs, to come out of jobs, adjust their hours, which adjust their income. So this is not only a physical tsunami, but it's also an emotional one, a financial one, and a spiritual one to everyone who gets it.
Now, the launch of the Alzheimer's Association's Women's Initiative really came about by the work that you and the association did when you produced the Shriver Report, Women's Nation's Take on Alzheimer's in 2010. So how was the report received, and what inspired you from that report to start this women's initiative?
Well, the report reported that for the first time, Alzheimer's was a woman's disease. It reported for the first time that women were disproportionately affected, and I think that was huge news to everybody. So that was really inspiring, and it has inspired this initiative to galvanize women from all walks of life, all economic groups, all parts of the country and the globe to get involved, put their brains on this disease, and figure out a way to wipe it out. So this is an educational campaign, it's an engagement campaign, it's a fundraising campaign, but most important to me, it's an empowerment campaign. Many people look at Alzheimer's and think it's hopeless. I disagree. I think it's a powerful movement that we're building. I think there's a lot of hope out there, a lot of interest in all of the incredible things going on in neuroscience and going on in research, and Dr. Correo can address that. But there's a lot of excitement. We just need to fund the research, and the Alzheimer's Association has started a fund to do just that.
Now, the campaign that you're involved in, the association is looking for women across the country to create their own brain trust. So what do you mean when you use the word brain trust, and what kinds of women are you looking for to join in this initiative?
I'm looking for every kind of woman. I say that a brain trust is like a book club. You know, just think of it as your brain club. You need about 10 people in it. You need those people to help you if you find yourself in a caregiving situation. You need those people to tell you about cognitive health, to keep you informed, to spell you, and to support you. So I think that's the wave of the future. As books become more and more things you read on an iPad or a Kindle, your brain club is the group that you will turn to if you find yourself in a caregiving situation or if you're doubting your own cognitive health.
I think it's a wonderful idea, because I think that having women together in a group produces a lot of more creative thinking than we can have when we try to do it each individually.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it also helps with loneliness, which is and depression, which are also tied to Alzheimer's.
Now, I also understand that the Association's Women's Initiative is going to use part of the money that it's gotten from donors to focus on research about women and the disease. And one important point, and I hadn't realized, although Alzheimer's is one of the top 10 deadliest diseases, that when it comes to research, it only gets a fraction of that of cancer and heart disease. Why is that?
That's a really good question, and I think Maria can answer that. I think we have to agitate more. We have to instigate more. We have to mobilize better. I think we can take a cue from AIDS activists and cancer activists. They get billions of dollars, and Alzheimer's doesn't. So obviously we have to do a better job.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Maria answering that for you as well, because unfortunately we haven't had the successes in research that other diseases have had, which have been phenomenal for other diseases where the death rates are actually going down. Unfortunately, Alzheimer's has continued to skyrocket. So what we have to do as a country and as women is really advocate for ourselves and say, this is enough. It is time to elevate the status of Alzheimer's disease, because we are living longer because of all of our other phenomenal findings in other diseases, and it's time to think about brain health. We don't want to reach our golden years and not be able to actually enjoy them as golden years. So that's really our goal. And there's a lot of great research that we can focus on to understand why not only women are disproportionately affected by Alzheimer's, but to understand overall why Alzheimer's is affecting us over 65, mostly as an aging disease.
And I think politicians respond to the electorate. If people tell them they want more funding for brain research, they follow what the country says. So I think if the country galvanizes, if the country gets behind this movement and says, you know, we need this because so many people can't leave their jobs to care for their parents who might get Alzheimer's. They don't have the money to get assistance or to hire a caregiver. So this is really a huge financial issue for us as a nation, not just for individual families across the nation.
Now, Maria, you've done so many wonderful things, and when it comes to Alzheimer's, you were the co-executive producer of the film Still Alice, which is about a young woman's anguish because we have this early onset phenomenon in Alzheimer's and her anguish in dealing with the diagnosis of the disease. And, of course, she won the Academy Award. It's been highly acclaimed. It's very compelling. And your hope is that it can do for Alzheimer's patients what the Oscar-winning movie Philadelphia did for people living with AIDS, and I was wondering what kind of feedback you've gotten from this wonderful movie.
Well, I think we've gotten that kind of feedback. I think people are seeing Alzheimer's in a whole new light. They didn't know that a woman in her 50s, who was at the prime of her career, could be struck down by Alzheimer's. They didn't know that families came together around this disease like the one depicted in Still Alice. So I'm very grateful that Still Alice has struck a chord in this country. I was really honored to be a part of it, and I hope that it has spurred conversations at homes across the country, and that's why we're starting this movement to build on all of these things that so many people have done over these past many years. As you will see on the big wall of empowerment, as you go on to wipeoutalzheimers.org, you will see so many women that are out there in states all over the country doing extraordinary work. They need our support. They need other women to join in with them. Perhaps they will inspire a woman who's listening to this today to start her own organization or to get involved with some of the incredible work that's already being done.
And I wondered if you could give out the website again, because is that a place that women can go to that are listening to the show today and say, hey, I want to sign up, but I don't know how to go about it. I want to start one. I need a little bit of help.
It's very simple. They can go to wipeoutalzheimers.org. They can take the pledge themselves. They put their name in there. They can go to the big wall of empowerment and look at all the women who are already out there, see where their organizations are, and if it's near where they live, they can join those women, support those women, or perhaps start something like what those women did in their own area or neighborhood.
That's Maria Shriver, and with Maria Shriver is Dr. Maria Correo in conversation with Carol Marx, talking about Alzheimer's and the way Alzheimer's has had a particular impact upon women. If you'd like some more information, go to wipeoutalzheimers.org. That's wipeoutalzheimers.org. Alzheimer's is spelled Alzheimers. wipeoutalzheimers.org for more information. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Carol Marx returns in just a moment, talking with Carolyn Brent about caregiving. She's written a book, and the book says it all. At least the title says it all. The book says a lot more. The Caregiver's Companion, caring for your loved one medically, financially, and emotionally while caring for yourself. It's published by Harlequin, and we're going to get into that next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. The National Institute of Mental Health reports elderly depression to be a serious public health problem. Recent research shows 15% of persons over 60, or roughly 6.5 million Americans, are suffering from depression, while 25% state they suffer from sadness. Health practitioners that care and treat the elderly, including primary care physicians, are unprepared to detect and diagnose depression. Let's review depression's warning signs. Are you experiencing feelings of helplessness or sadness, most of the time lasting 2 weeks or longer? Have family members, friends noticed social withdrawal, self-neglect with personal hygiene, appearance, clothing, loss of appetite, weight loss, and maybe dehydration? Has your physical pain increased? Has there been a major loss, illness, or surgery recently? If any of these scenarios exist, an evaluation by a qualified MD is recommended. Successful treatment of depression would include both psychotherapy and medications. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of our program, its founder and guiding light, Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. She's in conversation now with Carolyn Brent, nationally acclaimed caregiver advocate who has dedicated her life to preparing the elderly and their caregivers to facing end-of-life issues. She's going to talk to Carol now about her new book. It's titled The Caregiver's Companion, Caring for Your Loved One Medically, Financially, and Emotionally While Caring for Yourself. It's published by Harlequin.
You became the primary caregiver of your family, and you said that the most important lesson you learned was that in order to be an effective caregiver, you must take care of yourself, and now you've written in your book that you wished at the time that you'd known to take that time to nurture yourself better while you were on that journey with your father. And don't you think that most caregivers must get really run down themselves?
Absolutely. I actually interviewed over 1,500 caregivers worldwide, and that was an 8-year process. And I asked one question. I was thinking, Carol, they're going to give me like 50 million answers, but I asked one question. What would you do differently if you had to do it all over again? And the one common denominator, the one thread, they said, I would have taken better care of me. So that's what I tell everybody. You got to take care of yourself first. Know when you're going in a red zone. Some caregivers in a red zone is like a fire truck, when you know that you're panicked and you can't do anything. If you can't do anything, take respite. Reach out for help. Let people know you need help. And I wasn't aware of that. I was working a full-time job. I was my father's primary caregiver. I was paying a lot of money out to try to get help. But I ran myself to the ground that now to this day, I have chronic back pain that I managed, though, but I'll have it for the rest of my life because I'm bone on bone in my spine. Why? I worked with a cast on my foot and hobbled along for 3 months, and that threw my walking off. So as a result, I'm paying for it, continue to pay for it. But the only thing I really, really want to stress to the world, anyone can be a caregiver. I interviewed an 11-year-old, caregiver.
Wow.
I said, well, what does an 11-year-old do? And she said, I'm a caregiver.
That's something. And, you know, and I think what helps everybody get through it would be different things. But what helps you, what you do now, is exercise a lot. And, of course, that would have helped you prevent your back injury, hopefully, and that you do meditation.
Absolutely. Now what I do, Carol, I give myself 1 hour a day to exercise and meditate and just think of me first. I put myself first. And then I start my day, so I share with the American population or the world population, take care of yourself first.
Now, you make an excellent point when you say it's very important, even if you have a family primary caregiver, to make caregiving a family affair. What things can relatives do to make the primary cares life easier? And what can a relative do to be helpful who lives a long distance away?
Well, that was that 11-year-old caregiver that I spoke with last week. I said, what do you do? She said, my mom and my dad, we do a family affair. I said, so what do you guys do as a family to take care of grandma? She said, I read to my grandmother. I read to her her favorite books, and then I ask her questions just to see if she knows what I'm talking about, because her grandmother's in the early stages of dementia. So the 11-year-old is the reader. Then the 20-year-old helps his mother change his grandmother's diaper. The daddy goes to work and makes the money. And the other, so it's a family affair. Everyone could get involved. Now, Carol, some people are going to say, well, I don't have any family. I don't have any blood relatives. Everyone's died off, or I'm just estranged from my family. And I'd say you have to create your own family. Family does not have to be blood. So reach out for help. There's people like me. There's millions of people like me that I didn't even realize exist until I started reaching out and also trying to change public policy to help caregivers so they could not only take care of themselves, but the caregivers are protected on the back end of caregiving when the family members has never been around, says, oh, Joe Blow or Sally Sue has passed on and I want money. I have been working with legislators to make sure that caregiver is not thrown under the bus at the end of caregiving.
Now, okay, suppose you're the primary caregiver for a family member, and you need to work, and you've finally been able to find someone that you think is competent to leave your loved one with who can do the care they need when you're not there. How do you deal with the guilt, you know, of leaving that loved one, and what happens when your loved one protests bitterly about having a stranger in the house take care of them?
You know, I went through that personally with my dad. I felt guilty. I felt like, oh my God, what am I going to do? But what I did, I had to mentally sober up. And what I mean by mentally sober up, I went through the denial, the depression, everything, the guilt. And once I said, in order for me to take care of dad, I've got to accept that he is sick. I have to accept that I have to study and learn all I can about that disease so I can help him. So that helps caregivers with feeling guilty. And then as far as monitoring, everybody needs to be vetted. And what I mean by that, there are organizations around the country popping up every place that will do background checks and check out the person that's right for the parent. And the parent is going to feel resistant. That's natural. You don't want to just throw somebody in on your parent. It's a gradual thing. Maybe that caregiver that you're hiring, bring them with you once a week. And don't call them a caregiver. Just say, oh, this is my friend Sally Sue. Trust me, it works because I have been the Sally Sue before. And I go in and befriend the parent or the loved one and just by dropping by. And pretty soon, the resistance become less and less, because resistance is for many reasons. It could be they don't trust you, or they think you're trying to take their money. But most importantly, we have to go deeper. Maybe they are not our resistant loved ones. They're depressed. Depression is 59% of elderly. They are depressed because their wife or their husband or somebody died. So we have to know the why. So that's what we do. You've got to take your time, study, be patient, 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 and that loved one will come around.
Now, in your book, you talk about the importance of having crucial legal conversations with your loved one to make sure their wishes are carried out, and there are several legal documents that need to be prepared. How in the world do you start this very awkward conversation with a family member, and with the documents that you need to get, if you do get them prepared, where in the world do you keep them?
You know, this is the key. Having the crucial conversation about money is always a very tough conversation to have. It breaks a lot of families up. But this is what I say. Get your own legal documents first. Who's ever going to approach the family member, have your own trust, your own will, your own medical directive, all your own. I mean, there's four major documents that you need, and I have them lined out line by line in the book, and I have a fifth document. So I share with folks, when you do approach that loved one, go to that loved one and say, look, this is these are all my legal documents. The attorney has explained everything to me, and I have this person or that person as my medical proxy just in case I get ran over by a bus. Then the hospital will know who's going to take care of me. Mom, dad, or whoever that chronically ill, resistant person is, ask, well, do you want the state to take care, to make medical decisions for you in the hospital? Do you want the state to share with hospice what kind of food you're going to eat? The state is somebody that the state will appoint, a stranger. So when we take our time and we approach it very delicately by having your own documents together first. And one thing, Carol, that I want to mention, over 55% of the American population, they don't have a will, a trust, nothing in place. We just walk this world thinking that, okay, one of these days when I grow old, I'll do it later. Now is the time because when it comes to death, death has no barrier of age. So I'm stressing to everyone, get your own documents in first. Once you get all the legal documents dotted, with the professional, or you can do it yourself, they must be recorded in a courthouse or someplace. You've got to get it recorded. And where do you store the documents? In a safe place where you know that you know you're going to find it, and make a copy of the medical directive. Keep it in your wallet. Keep it in your purse. Keep whatever, like a driver's license.
That's Carolyn Brent in conversation with Carol Marks. And her book is titled The Caregiver's Companion, Caring for Your Loved One Medically, Financially, and Emotionally While Caring for Yourself. It's published by Harlequin. If you'd like more information, visit caregiversstory.com. And caregivers is plural, so it's caregiversstory.com. Still coming up on the program, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, a little behind-the-scenes media stuff for you. And then Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent, joins us to talk with Dr. Bradley Foster, a Cornell University graduate who completed his ophthalmology residency at Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary at Harvard Medical School. And he's now with the New England Retina Consultants in Springfield, Massachusetts. And he's going to talk to Steve about the signs and symptoms of macular degeneration and retinal detachments. Big topic, unfortunately. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a round table of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. And so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also, there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this time each program by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who is the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, which serves the talk radio business at talkers.com. Kevin, what are some of the things people are talking about on News Talk Radio this week?
Well, Michael, one of the big topics this week is Dick Cheney is in Playboy magazine.
Does he talk about having lust in his heart?
I don't know that he does, but actually he is the interview for the month, and big interview, and he's critical of President Obama, but he is.
You're kidding.
Playboy this month.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was going to say, critical of President Obama. Well, get online, you know.
I know.
The joke I made before about lust in your heart, for the younger listeners in our audience, they may not remember that I think it was Jimmy Carter who admitted to having lust in his heart occasionally in Playboy magazine a number of years ago. Jimmy Carter, of course, known for his morals and, straight-shooting way of life. But that was quite a controversy then. I don't know. Playboy magazine, when you stop and think about it, talk about a cultural icon that's been around for so long. When I was a kid, we used to say things like, I only read it for the articles, not for the pictures. But today,
right.
I think more people, considering the advent, the progress that has been made in the world of pornography that can be brought into your house for free on any computer, and certainly is a problem in terms of raising young people who understand how to use computers more aptly than their parents do. I think it's more appropriate nowadays to say I don't read Playboy for the pictures, but rather I read Playboy for the stories.
Yeah, right. It's almost, if you're, I would imagine if you're a young person who is interested in pictures of naked people and you said, I read Playboy, they would say, why?
Exactly.
The relevance of it now, certainly as you point out, would be much more well-served as being a place to read great in-depth interviews. And it was known, as obviously you are aware, for doing that very well in the back in the day.
And I imagine, I have to be honest, I haven't read a Playboy magazine. I can't remember. But I do remember that back in the day, they did have good articles.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of their interviews actually were newsworthy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting to look back at the decades, and we're talking a long way back. Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, thank you for joining us. He joins us every week at this time. And if you want to know what's going on behind the scenes in the talk radio world, go to talkers.com. Michael Harrison, A Touch of Gray, continues in a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. The National Institute of Mental Health reports elderly depression to be a serious public health problem. Recent research shows 15% of persons over 60, or roughly 6.5 million Americans, are suffering from depression, while 25% state they suffer from sadness. Health practitioners that care and treat the elderly, including primary care physicians, are unprepared to detect and diagnose depression. Let's review depression's warning signs. Are you experiencing feelings of helplessness or sadness, most of the time lasting 2 weeks or longer? Have family members, friends noticed social withdrawal, self-neglect with personal hygiene, appearance, clothing, loss of appetite, weight loss, and maybe dehydration? Has your physical pain increased? Has there been a major loss, illness, or surgery recently? If any of these scenarios exist, an evaluation by a qualified MD is recommended. Successful treatment of depression would include both psychotherapy and medications. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman's in conversation now with Dr. Bradley Foster. He's a Cornell University graduate who completed his ophthalmology residency at Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary at Harvard Medical School. He's now with the New England Retina Consultants in Springfield, Massachusetts, and he's going to talk to Steve about the signs and symptoms of macular degeneration and retinal detachments.
Let me ask you, Dr. Foster, about a couple of things I know we deal with as we get older, and one of them is macular degeneration. What is that?
Macular degeneration is, as you mentioned, a very common eye condition, particularly in our aging population. The retina is the back part of the eye, like the film of the camera, and the macula is the central part of the retina. It's the part of the retina that we use for fine, detailed vision, like reading, seeing a face, driving a car. And with age, the macula can become damaged, and there's two main varieties of macular degeneration. The dry type, which is a slow deterioration of the cells of the macula. It tends to cause gradual visual changes, which are often milder. But the more devastating type of macular degeneration, and the one that most people are more familiar with, is the wet type, because that is associated with leakage and bleeding. It can cause very dramatic visual changes that are in abrupt in onset over days or a week. And that can cause a sudden decrease in vision. The good news about the wet type of macular degeneration is that we now have many treatments for it.
What causes it?
Well, it's multifactorial. There are certainly genetic components, so it does tend to run in families. If you have a family history of it, you do have some increased risk of developing it. But there are other studies which show a lot of environmental risks, whether it be a diet over a lifetime. People have looked at sun exposure. People have looked at all sorts of other contributors. And there's no one gene or one cause. You could have two brothers, both who have macular degeneration. Technically, one brother is legally blind with severe disease, and the other brother has very mild disease and still drives. So there are a lot of factors other than genetics.
You mentioned nutrition as one. So are the bunnies right? Should we be eating carrots, or what's a good diet for your eye health?
Well, these studies are retrospective, which means that they look backwards in time and they give hundreds or thousands of people a questionnaire and they look at what type of diet are you eating, and they try to make conclusions. They try to draw conclusions from that. And if you look at these dietary studies, clearly patients who have healthier diets, lower fat diets, diets that are higher in green leafy vegetables like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, spinach, those patients do have a lower incidence of macular degeneration over a lifetime. Now, this is not necessarily causative, meaning that you can't necessarily say if I give somebody broccoli, mm-hmm. I will lower their incidence of macular degeneration. That is a different question than simply saying if I look back in time, which of these patients had healthier diets. For instance, if someone's eating a lot of broccoli, maybe it means that they're not eating a lot of hamburgers. So it's very tricky to draw those conclusions. People have looked at the components within the vegetables and within the foods, like lutein, et cetera, and have tried to do studies to show that those type of vitamins or minerals will lower their incidence of macular degeneration. And in some cases, such as the AREDS vitamins, those have proven true, and they can lower the incidence of the dry form of macular degeneration turning into the wet form of macular degeneration.
Oh, that's pretty significant. Actually, I'm glad you had mentioned something about with the sun, and I always wanted to ask an ophthalmologist about sunglasses. How important are they to wear sunglasses, and is there should we be wearing prescription sunglasses, or the things we're going to get at the pharmacy? Are those going to be good enough? What's your thoughts on sunglasses?
Well, I think a lot of sunglasses these days do have UV protection, which is the most important component. The studies that have looked at sunlight certainly have found a higher incidence of certain conditions such as cataract formation, which is a cloudy lens, or macular degeneration, but this is over a lifetime. For instance, if you look at people who have outdoor jobs, construction workers, or outdoor jobs over decades, they do have a higher incidence of some of these conditions than people who have jobs in an office building. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean that you go out in the sun on a sunny day to the beach, and it's going to cause any of these things. It's over very, very long periods of time. Any of the sunglasses with UV protection, I think, would be adequate.
Now, you mentioned that there are some successful treatments for macular degeneration. What are some of the treatments being used now?
Well, when I was in training, the treatments were very little. Conventional laser, which would cauterize blood vessels, but it did a lot of damage to the retina, and it did very little to improve vision, and at most, maybe it slowed down visual loss somewhat. Then a different type of laser came around called photodynamic therapy, where we injected a dye in the hand or the arm, and it was a gentler type of laser that did a lot less destruction, but still didn't really improve vision. And now, most recently, we finally have treatments that can improve vision, and they involve injections of medicines directly into the eye. These medicines are administered through a very small needle. The eye is numbed well, so people don't feel very much. It's extremely well tolerated, and studies have shown that it is able to improve vision in a very significant number of patients with wet macular degeneration.
Mm.
The downsides of the treatment are that they don't last forever. They wear off, and a series of treatments are often required.
How often should we get our eyes checked, and should we do it more often as we age?
I think the answer there, it depends on a patient's symptoms. In other words, if somebody is not having symptoms,
mm-hmm.
They have no flashing lights, no changes in vision, no distorted vision, nothing new is going on, no significant family history of eye problems, then an annual visit is adequate. The times where we really have a high chance of finding something is when someone's having a change in vision.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's having new floaters out of the ordinary. Someone's having new distortion in their vision. Someone's having horrible glare in their vision. if they have those new symptoms, that is a change and out of the ordinary for them, that's when they should seek attention.
And you mentioned about the retina as well. What are some of the more common problems that people encounter as they age with their retinas?
The most common conditions that we treat, besides macular degeneration, which we just discussed, other common retinal problems that cause visual loss are diabetic retinopathy, which are the retinal consequences of diabetes, and some of the more common surgical conditions that we treat are retinal detachments.
What causes the retina to detach?
Retinas detach spontaneously. It's not from a not from trauma in the vast majority of cases like people often assume, but the vitreous or gel inside the eye collapses as we get a little older, and that collapsing or pulling of the gel on the retinal surface sometimes can cause tears or holes in the retina. When fluid gets through those tears or holes, it gets between the retina and the wall of the eye, and the retina detaches.
Are there any particular symptoms that should get us to the physician sooner than later, that if you encounter, you know, maybe if I'm, you know, just having a little bit, my glasses don't seem to be doing it. I didn't need glasses till I was in my 40s, and then, you know, gradually I've had to increase them. But what kinds of things should people definitely go see their eye doctor about?
Well, as mentioned a few moments ago, I think the key is something that's out of the ordinary for them. If we would go back to retinal detachments for a moment, so the biggest symptoms of retinal detachment are new flashing lights, new floaters, or a decrease in vision, particularly a curtain or shade coming down over the vision. But there are a lot of other eye problems that are even more common than retinal detachments. For instance, cataracts. And cataracts, which are a cloudy lens, will cause blurry vision. They can cause a lot of glare, particularly when driving. And those cataracts are easily treated with surgery these days.
Yeah, and it does seem to be, you know, so many people who have undergone cataract surgery, and it's just been almost the proverbial walk in the park. That really has gotten to a great level as far as being able to help people out, hasn't it?
It is a surgery that is very commonly performed. It doesn't mean that it is risk-free. The patients that I tend to see as a retina specialist, those patients have cataracts, but they also have other concurrent retinal problems, such as macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy. So they have to have some additional counseling so that they understand that cataract surgery will only rid them of their cataracts. It won't take care of their other eye problems. And in some cases, their other eye problems are much more significant for their visual decrease than are their cataracts.
You mentioned while driving, is it fairly common that as we age, our night vision will not be as effective?
It is a commonly reported complaint. Cataracts do play some role in that, but other conditions such as macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy also are associated with complaints of difficulty with night vision. There are many patients who will decide on their own that they're no longer comfortable driving at night. There are the Motor Vehicles Department in different states have guidelines for driving, and it's 20/40 or better for having a full driver's license. However, for many states, there are limited driver's licenses available for 20/70 or better, but that only allows them to drive during the day. So it is a common complaint to have difficulty with night driving. You will see many patients who will stop driving at night on their own. And again, for those patients who have moderate visual loss, there are often limited driver's licenses available for daytime-only driving.
That's world-famous ophthalmologist Dr. Bradley Foster in conversation with Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman returns in just a moment talking about the FTC suing Snuggies. What's that all about? You'll find out on A Touch of Gray. The talk show for grown-ups continues right here on this great talk radio station.
retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
You tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000. DINOVITE.com.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve is a prolific author. He's written a number of books. He's also an attorney, and he's also one of the nation's leading experts on scams and fraud here in the cyber age. He's written Identity Theft Alert and The Truth About Avoiding Scams, both published by Prentice Hall. And he has a website titled scamicide.com. Good place to visit to get lots of information if you want to avoid being scammed or if you have been the victim of a scam and you want to find out what to do. Go to scamicide.com. Steve joins us now to talk about the FTC suing Snuggies. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. Do you remember Snuggies? Well, direct marketer All-Star Marketing Group. And they make a lot of familiar as-seen-on-TV products, like the Magic Mesh Door Cover, the Cat's Meow, Roto Punch, the Perfect Tortilla, Forever Comfy, and, of course, the famous Snuggie, which is a blanket with sleeves. You used to see them all the time. Well, All-Star has now agreed to pay $7.5 million to the FTC to settle charges related to deceptive and confusing buy-one-get-one-free promotions. All marketers are required to clearly disclose all costs involved with the purchase of their products, including processing fees and handling fees. And according to the FTC, All-Star has been cheating consumers since 1999 using a confusing buy one, get one free promotion that failed to clearly disclose the real cost, whereby a consumer would not be aware of undisclosed processing and handling fees that would considerably raise the cost of the purchase. In addition, the FTC alleged that AllStar would use misleading automated voice prompts when customers purchase items by phone that would result in consumers not only paying more than they realize for products, but even charge consumers who hung up during the call thinking they weren't making a purchase. Now, the FTC and the New York's Attorney General's office work jointly on this, and the New York Attorney General's office is going to receive an additional $500,000 as part of the settlement, in addition to the $7.5 million paid to the FTC. The funds paid to the FTC will be refunded to defrauded consumers, and when I hear more about details on that, I'll let you know. In addition to their television advertising, AllStar also used a website to sell its products online, and the same fraudulent tactics were used, although in some instances, the charges were actually disclosed in fine print at the bottom of the page. And as I always say, there is little that is fine about fine print, but it's critical that you understand what's in the fine print before you ever buy a product. You know, this is the same kind of thing that we're seeing now with DirecTV, and you may have seen a lot of the DirecTV ads with Rob Lowe. They, too, are being sued by the Federal Trade Commission, this time saying that in their advertising, they really didn't tell people that the one-year subscription low rate you only get if you sign up for 2 years. The second year it goes up, and then it's a large fee if you try and cancel. What happens in a lot of these settlements is what's interesting, and they did this with Snuggies too. Rather than go to court, the company being sued settles, and they admit no liability. So what they do is they say, we didn't do anything wrong, we'll pay money, and we promise not to do it again. But be your own best friend. Check out that fine print.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman joins us each week here on A Touch of Gray. And again, Identity Theft Alert and the Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, his latest books, Scamicide.com, his website. Our website, atouchofgray.com, gray is spelled with an E. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, on the front line, our producer who puts it all together. Thank you, of course, to Steve Wiseman and Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine for their contributions to our program. And, of course, a very big thank you and expression of gratitude to Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. She is, in fact, the host and the founder of our program. I'm the anchor, Michael Harrison, thanking you for joining us and inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.